Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Once again, it's a pleasure, really a pleasure, being back on the air to our large audience in the Northeast, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, via the new Radio 710 WOR. And we've got lots to talk about in 2014. And we want to hear from you as well. 888-302-3684 is our number. And we're going to be taking your phone calls, and we'd love to hear what's on your mind. So before we get to that, though, I got to say the really big story in 2013. And one of my regrets about having a hiatus from Health Talk just precisely at that time of the year, around Thanksgiving, we went off the air for a few weeks. And this is precisely the time when I thought, oh, I'm really needed by my poor listeners, the people on Facebook and via email in my office are just barraging me about all those negative articles about supplements. Headlines were screaming, vitamins lack clear health benefits, may pose risks, and even should we toss our vitamins, or, you know, lurid headlines about Americans spend billions on worthless supplements. And it was almost as if there was like a concerted media attack on supplements. And in just a couple of moments, I'm going to share with you why that happened. Because clearly there's a concerted effort to get supplements under control of the Food and Drug Administration. See, the FDA is very disappointed that way back in 1994, they passed a law called the Dietary Supplement Health Education Act, which was sort of a compromise because the vitamin industry wisely knew that there needed to be some kind of regulation. So they compromised with the FDA. And through certain allies in Congress, the FDA got pushed back a little bit. They didn't get everything they wanted. They actually wanted to make it so that virtually every supplement that you buy in a health food store has to be pre-approved by the FDA. In other words, I come up with a new idea. I mean, even a new combination. Say, let's take, for example, PhytoGuard, one of my favorite supplement formulas. It was a combination of resveratrol and potent extract of pomegranate and extract of green tea, and it's got curcumin, and it's got extract of cabbage family, and it's got some quercetin in it. It's got some lycopene in it. So it's got all those helpful protective nutrients. But let's say I came up with that idea under the system that the FDA envisions. They would say, great, submit your formula to the FDA, and we'll have to do safety tests on it, we'll analyze it, and, oh, by the way, have your lawyers and handlers get in touch with us. And a few million dollars later, and I'm not using hyperbole here, and perhaps a few years later, I would get the supplement approved. Or not. They might say, well, you know, we're not sure that, you know, the amounts of the stuff you're using here couldn't be dangerous based on their erroneous ideas of what should be in a supplement. I mean, they're not in the best position, frankly, to evaluate the safety and efficacy of supplements. They haven't done such a great job with drugs, by the way, but at least they provide us with some measure of oversight when dangerous drugs are introduced on the market. Although, you know, time and time again, the FDA has failed to protect Americans from drugs which years later turned out to have very serious health risks. But that's another subject. Anyway, so back in 1994, DSHEA got passed, and the FDA is not really happy with that. And they have allies in Congress, pro-regulatory folks, including folks like Henry Waxman, Dick Durbin, others who they believe in good government. They believe in protecting the consumer, but they also believe in big government, and they believe in lots of regulation. They have allies in the media And they certainly have allies in the pharmaceutical industry, which pharmaceutical industry would be very happy to take over the supplement industry because they have the apparatus in place already to get supplements approved by the Food and Drug Administration. I mean, they do it on a routine basis. They have people in place, some of whom have previously worked for the Food and Drug Administration. It's a revolving door. You work for a while for the government, then you work for the drug companies because you know the ropes. You know who to call. You know how to push the right buttons to get things approved. So... Also, conventional medical doctors, I mean, as you know, if you've been to your doctor lately, doctors tend to be very skeptical about supplements, not all of them, but many of them. That's not what we're taught in medical school. And supplements have a bad rep among conventional doctors. So there seems to be a concerted effort which involves a coalition of the media, the conventional medical establishment, the government, both the executive branch, regulators, as well as folks in Congress, in an effort to malign supplements and get people to take less supplements or at least bring supplements under more regulation. All right. So anyway, so this is something that I've been talking about a lot. And without the benefit of a terrestrial radio station, I've been talking about it in podcasts. You can get these podcasts at drhoffman.com/podcasts. And we've interviewed a lot of experts on the subject of vitamin supplement safety, on herbal supplement safety. We got a great podcast with Mark Blumenthal about safety and effectiveness of herbs recently and about some of the very biased press attacks in places like the New York Times. New York Times wrote a very erroneous article about herbs and supplements recently using a faulty test methodology that was just obviously wrong, suggesting that the stuff you buy in health food stores, there's no active material. Well, you use the wrong test, you won't find any active material. And then the Annals of Medicine published the big study that got everybody talking about how supplements are useless. Actually, three studies. And then they trumpeted, and this is, I have to say, I've been doing this for a quarter century now, 25 years of broadcasting. I don't think I've ever seen such a concerted onslaught against supplements. They actually had the temerity in the Annals of Maternal Medicine to say, case closed about supplements. Case closed? That's nuts. I mean, in terms of a scientific discussion, virtually never is a case closed. That would be a little bit like saying after a series of unfavorable studies on the ultimate effectiveness of chemotherapy, and God knows chemotherapy helps a lot of people, but in some cases is ineffective, you could say, all right, case closed on chemotherapy. Let's not waste any more money studying chemotherapy for cancer because it's a waste of time. It makes people miserable, and the studies aren't showing any benefit. It's just not scientific. It's evidence of extreme bias. And what this is doing is, I mean, ultimately, I have spent a lot of time over the past few weeks talking to people and reading scientific articles that make my eyes go bleary because, you know, somebody's got to do this kind of work. The average journalist can't do it because they're just not equipped with the scientific knowledge, critical abilities to read these studies. So they just sort of pass along uncritically the conclusions of some of these articles in medical journals without saying, let's take a look. You know, in a news story, often, you know, the government will float out some kind of propagandistic statement, and then true journalists will challenge that statement. They'll say, you know, Mr. Secretary, Mr. President, Congressman, what you're saying, I got to say, here's some facts that challenge that. Well, no, they uncritically published the supposed information indicting supplements as worthless. And I wrote several articles on this. You can find one of my articles at mindbodygreen.com. I posted it at drhoffman.com. One of the good ways to stay abreast of this is please follow me on Facebook or Twitter. We try to get all the information out there, and drhoffman.com is going to be a very useful platform for getting that information out. Also, our newsletter is a great way to stay abreast of some of my my investigative reporting on subjects like this. But we're going to go through some of the downsides and deficiencies of some of the studies that purport to say that vitamins are useless this hour, but we'd like to hear from you. Our number is a new number. Write this down, because you're going to be using it frequently if you want to call me on Saturdays. It's 888-302-3684, 888-302-3684, and that's a way to talk to me directly about whatever's on your mind. You can visit me in the doctor's office here on Intelligent Medicine every week now in 2014. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us this hour. This is Intelligent Medicine.
Hey, Joe, have you ever heard the joke about the guy who can't walk and chew gum at the same time? Well, not only can I walk and chew gum, but I can improve my dental health all at the same time, too.
Seriously, Fred, how does that work?
It's easy. I chew Spry xylitol gum. It's gum with a purpose. Spry is an all-natural gum made with xylitol, not sugar or artificial sweeteners. It tastes great and comes in five flavors. You know, Joe, bacteria can't break down xylitol, and this leads to less plaque and less acid to cause cavities. My mouth feels fresh, clean, and healthy.
So who makes Spry?
Spry is made by the folks at Clear. They also have xylitol mints. It's so cool. Like me. My dentist totally recommended it, and it costs the same as regular gum and mints, but you get the added health benefits.
Put the Spry back in your step, and you can walk, chew gum, and help your dental health all at the same time, too. Spry gum and mints are available at Vitamin Shop, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food retailers nationwide.
A regular dose of Intelligent Medicine injected directly into your inbox. Subscribe to Dr. Hoffman's free newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I want to thank all the people, innumerable people, who emailed us and called me at the office and posted on Facebook saying, you know, where in the heck are you? And we hope you come back soon. And, you know, I know it was dismaying and disorienting for so many of you out there. And we're so very happy to be back on. And all's well that ends well in 2014. And let's take our first caller. By the way, our number is 888-302-3684. And let's try Pete from New York City appropriately. Hi, Pete. How you doing?
How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Good, thanks.
I'm a little confused. I'm 56 years old, and you know I get regular screenings and stuff. I get the fasting glucose levels, and those have always been like in the 80s and 90s.
It's fine.
And the A1C at one time, I guess when I was younger, was 5.4. It seems to be creeping up a bit. They did a continuous glucose monitoring thing for 7 days, and they didn't see any, you know, real excursions and stuff. And
why did they do that, Pete? Why were you concerned?
Well, I was just concerned. And then, you know, recently I had an A1C, and it was 5.9. I think 3 months ago it was 5.7. I don't know if that was an aberration. And then I take a low dose statin, 10 milligrams.
Well, that actually could be part of the problem, which I'll talk about in just a second. All right, so here's the deal. You know, for our listening audience, you know, what is hemoglobin A1C? What relationship does it have to blood sugar? There are various ways to ascertain your blood sugar. You know, one is to just check your blood sugar with a finger stick device or draw some blood, and you'll find out what your blood sugar is at the time. But that may vary based on, you know, whether you're eating, whether you fasted, and some people are dismayed when their blood sugar is 120 after a visit to the doctor's office. But the first question you ask is, did you have breakfast? And maybe just in the wake of having breakfast that their blood sugar was a little high. Normally we like to see fasting blood sugars, 75, 80, something like that. Even a blood sugar of, in the high 90s or certainly over 100, might be cause for concern if it's fasting. The hemoglobin A1C measures the blood sugar over the lifespan of a red blood cell. Red blood cells generally live for 120 days. So it kind of gives you an average of what's going on. So say, you know, you come see me and your hemoglobin A1C is high, and then you say, I want to do another test in a month, I'll say, don't bother, because you have to go for fully 3 months, or at least a couple of months anyway, to probably to get the full benefits, 120 days, to see the full benefit of the change. So what they generally say is that if it's under 6.2, you're fine. But actually, we believe that a hemoglobin A1C should be 5.5 or less, optimally. When you start going into 5.6, 5.7, 5.8, 5.9, it's okay, but it suggests that you might have borderline problems with handling sugar. And certainly if it's over 6, that's cause for concern usually. The exception is if you're an insulin-dependent diabetic, and you get it down to 6.2, hooray, that's great. That's good control. That's, you know, that means that you're really controlling your diabetes very well. We don't want too tight control it, because that means you're taking excess insulin, which can make you gain a lot of weight. All right, so with you, you know, a hemoglobin A1C of 5.9 may be a problem. The test of choice, and we do this in the office quite routinely, and even patients have fairly normal hemoglobin A1C and blood sugars, we'll do a glucose tolerance test, and we'll see if the blood sugar goes up in a challenge situation, a real-life situation, not just one check. We give people a sugar solution. We see if the blood sugar goes up. It will. But if it goes up inordinately high, or if it then plummets low and you get reactive hypoglycemia, that tells you something about the metabolism. In addition, we measure insulin production, and that's really a very early harbinger of what we call the metabolic syndrome. Now, the metabolic syndrome, or insulin resistance, is actually associated with probably about 60-70% of all degenerative disease that Americans experience. So if we can knock that off, we'd really help a lot of people and save a lot of healthcare costs. It may be associated not just with diabetes, but also with cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's disease, dementia, inflammatory disorders, even cancer. So we want to obviously reduce insulin resistance. So, you know, what I'm going to tell you without seeing you or having more data, Pete, is that there, with a hemoglobin A1C of 5.9, there may be a problem. There may be a problem. You still with me?
Yes.
Yeah. So actually, it's interesting what that precisely measures is, and it visualize this, is hemoglobin. You know, go back to your science class. What's hemoglobin? Hemoglobin is a protein. It's actually one of the first proteins discovered. You know who discovered it and worked out the structure of it? It was Linus Pauling. It's pretty cool. And that's what, I mean, he's famous for vitamin C, but actually he figured out, you know, the structure of the hemoglobin molecule. And so it's a protein. And when the hemoglobin A1C means glycosylated hemoglobin, that means a sugar gets stuck onto the protein. Now, one of the ways that this happens is in your kitchen. You know, when you cook something, you know, or when you're putting some on the grill, you know, a way to put a nice char on it, you know, get like a crust on some barbecued ribs, is to put molasses on there. It's a sugary solution. Any kind of sugar will do. And that's glycosylation. All right. It's the browning reaction or glycosylation. And oh, by the way, when you glycosylate your proteins that are in your bloodstream or in your anywhere in your body, it could be in your eye, in your brain, in your heart, in your liver, in your blood vessel linings, you make those proteins kaput. You know, they get fried in effect. So glycosylated hemoglobin is an important marker of the process by which you become glycosylated. And another word for glycosylation is age glycosylation end products, or age glycation end products. They're associated with aging. All right. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. When we return, we're going to take a look at some of the flaws in the current studies that suggest that vitamins are worthless. So not. This is Intelligent Medicine. Heart disease is the number one killer in America, but you don't need to become a statistic. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we'd like to share with you that one of the best ways that I found to support heart health is by taking Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Backed by more than 700 peer-reviewed studies, Kyolic provides powerful antioxidants that help keep your arteries healthy. It reduces homocysteine, a risk factor for heart disease. Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract has also been shown to support healthy cholesterol levels and proper circulation.
With all of these heart healthy benefits, it's no surprise that Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is the best-selling garlic supplement in the world. Unlike other garlic products, Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is completely odorless and won't upset your stomach. Made from 100% organically grown garlic, I recommend taking Kyolic daily as part of a heart-healthy lifestyle. Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is available at Vitamin Shop, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores nationwide.
DrHoffman.com, your portal for cutting-edge information on health and nutrition.
Back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman here. Our number, 888-302-3684. Now, one of the main reasons that I'm returning to the air is because you out there need a voice to articulate your concerns when the mainstream media is simply parroting the party line of medical journals and pharmaceutical companies. And we really need a counterbalance to that. Now, I don't purport to have the outreach of mainstream news outlets. This is kind of like guerrilla media, and that's what we're going to have to do these days. We're going to have to undertake a grassroots campaign to seek the truth, and that's what intelligent medicine is all about. So if you go to drhoffman.com or if you check out mindbodygreen.com, you can learn why I think you should keep taking your supplements. But I'm going to share with you, there's some detailed articles there. But I'm going to share with you some of the problems with the articles that are cited by the mainstream media that suggest that supplements are worthless or even harmful. By the way, just this week, an article came out that suggests that high-dose vitamin E, did you see that one? High-dose vitamin E can slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease. Dramatic improvements in patients who were suffering from Alzheimer's disease. Look, I'm not going to say this is a cure, but in that study, they used, get ready for this, 2,000 international units of vitamin E. Now, we've been told that vitamin E is harmful, dangerous, don't bother taking it. And so many of the studies on vitamin E that showed no benefit, they were giving people 200 or 400 international units. Finally, they did a study using hefty doses of vitamin E in patients with mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease, and they found that they could take care of themselves for up to 6 months longer. There was this 20% improvement in their ability to undertake self-care with just vitamin E alone. And when vitamin E was combined with one of the more popular drugs to slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease, there was no improvement with that drug. That drug is actually going to come under fire as a result of this new study. So vitamin E proved more decisive than one of the more popular drugs for slowing the progression of Alzheimer's disease. Of course, there is no cure, and the drugs are pretty darn near worthless. Of interest in that study is that's not even the vitamin E that I would use. That's old-fashioned alpha-tocopherol. That's the kind of vitamin E that we used in the early 1990s. I've since abandoned it, and most nutritionally-oriented doctors are now using mixed tocopherols, rich in gamma-tocopherol. It would be interesting to see what would happen if they undertook a study using the right kind of vitamin E in Alzheimer's patients. So looking at the studies that purport to show no value, several are meta-analyses. Now, what a meta-analysis is, it's not new research. It's research where you get to pick and choose which studies you include, and you use certain criteria to say it's a good study, it's not a good study. But meta-analyses are notoriously subject to bias. You can actually cherry-pick the data to support your foregone conclusion. So there are many, many, many studies showing the benefits of supplements that were simply not deemed worthy of inclusion in the statistical analysis in the Annals of Internal Medicine. So how do you spell bias, anyone? B-I-A-S. Or possibly shorter, just B-S. Also, we don't even know about some of the patients in these studies. When you do vitamin studies, it's very hard to know whether people really take the supplements in question. You know, they may say they take the supplements. Some people can't even tell you, yours truly included, you know, what they had breakfast last Thursday. You know, do you remember? Well, you know, these are studies where they say, well, you know, are you taking supplements? What supplements are you taking in questionnaires? It's very hard to know that people really did it. Some people, it's wishful thinking. It's, yes, I exercise. Yes, I take supplements. Do you really? The quality of most of the supplements evaluated in the Annals of Medicine articles is questionable. And, you know, I'm going to name names. A popular multivitamin was one of them. It was Centrum. And these are bargain basement multis that contain minimal amounts of key nutrients, often in the least bioavailable forms. Beta-carotene is vitamin A, for example, or D-alpha-tocopherol is E. These are just obsolete forms of nutrients that they, in modern supplements, they should be offered in natural full-spectrum forms in significant amounts, you know, maybe, you know, 60 milligrams of vitamin C or 100 international units of vitamin D. That's not enough to show efficacy. And, oh, by the way, they determined that Centrum, they looked, it was very narrow focus. They said, well, Centrum slow cognitive decline in a large group of men in the physician's health study, and it did not. So they conclude vitamins are worthless. Well, that's just one very specific thing. If you take Centrum, you perhaps will not slow cognitive decline with a very paltry multivitamin. But in the very self-same study, there was a significant reduction in prostate cancer. They didn't mention that. That actually came out last year. But that would actually show the value of supplementation. And Centrum's been trying to get the word out about that. But then the FDA slapped them down and said, no, you can't make a disease claim about your vitamin supplement. So they're feeling the pain of some of the vitamin manufacturers now, even though they're made by a big pharmaceutical company. One of the annals studies that was used to demonstrate that vitamins are not beneficial, I've actually talked about this study, big study in, came out last year that showed that chelation therapy was beneficial. That also looked at vitamins and supplements. Because when you take chelation, you're supposed to take a supplement. Well, it was found that by taking a supplement, it didn't improve the benefits of chelation. But that's not what the study was about. It was actually a chelation study. The chelation study, remarkably, has shown dramatic improvements, especially in diabetic patients who've had heart attacks. The benefits of chelation, however, have not been widely touted or accepted. So, you know, the real double standard is they use the study to debunk vitamins, when actually the study is all about chelation. You don't hear anything about that. So that to me is total double standard. You know, huge studies like this also tend to overlook benefits of supplements for certain subgroups of individuals. So, for example, you know, you may look at 150,000 nurses or 175,000 doctors, and overall maybe there's no improvement in heart disease, but there may be improvements for significant numbers of individuals in, say, eye conditions or in energy, overall quality of life, in mood. But they, you know, they can't ask a million questions about did these vitamins help. So they very narrow focus. They said, well, did they, you know, look at heart attack incidents, for example, or they'll look at whether there are cognitive benefits. But these studies are poorly designed to discover benefits that may occur in a minority of individuals. Most studies were not done over long periods of time. It's really hard to do a study over many years. And the benefits of vitamins may accrue over decades, not just a few years. Lots and lots of methodological problems. And, you know, it gets a little technical. It's a little boring. I mean, that's what I do. You know, many doctors themselves don't even know how to properly evaluate studies. I mean, look, they're super smart individuals, but they don't teach this enough in medical schools, how to critically evaluate a study that, say, drug company does. You know, the drug company salesman appears in your office, hands you a study that shows that a new drug is great. When if you read between the lines critically, maybe not so much. That's what doctors are supposed to do. They're supposed to undertake critical thinking. They're supposed to apply intelligent medicine. That's what this program is all about. And we're going to share some of those impressions with you in 2014. We got callers, 888-302-3684. We'll get to some of your calls in just a moment on the weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine.
So glad we ate before we got on the plane.
Oh, me too. Would you like some gum or mints?
What kind do you have?
Spry gum and mints, made with xylitol from the folks at Clear. Both refreshing and good for you. Perfect for when it's not possible to brush your teeth.
Oh, like right now on the plane?
Exactly. You know, bacteria can't break down xylitol, which leads to better dental health. I love it. My teeth feel squeaky clean and my breath is so fresh.
That's great. Give me some. Oh, I wish we could find something to help with the dry air on this plane, too.
Well, Clear makes an all-natural xylitol spray for your nose and sinuses that soothes and moisturizes while not being addictive or harsh. Perfect for airplane travel.
Wow, Clear products really do all that?
Yes, they do. It's the xylitol in them. My whole family uses Clear xylitol products when we travel.
Where can I get them?
You can find Clear and Spry at your favorite health food stores. You know, like Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, and Sprouts.
Staying healthy and building immunity begins in your gut, where an amazing 70% of your immune cells reside. So keeping your digestive tract healthy is imperative for ideal health. I'm Dr. Fred Pescatore, author and science advisor for Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics. And there's no better way to improve your digestive health than taking a high-quality probiotic. I recommend taking Dr. O'Hara's every day to rev up the immune system because it has carefully selected strains of beneficial bacteria that work synergistically to maximize health and improve immunity. His exclusive formula delivers live, beneficial bacteria that are easily absorbed and provides optimal digestive support, boosts immunity, and increases energy through better absorption of nutrients. Backed by over 25 years of scientific research, I believe that Dr. O'Hara's probiotic is the most powerful and effective probiotic available. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference.
Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide.
Wellness is just a click away. Go to drhoffman.com.
Back to Intelligent Medicine. And, you know, because of the importance of this this issue of the media attacking supplements, we're sort of on a crisis footing, and we are convening an emergency summit at the Hoffman Center. That's going to be on February 26th, so plenty of advance planning time for you, where we're going to discuss the unprecedented assault on complementary and alternative medicine and supplements in general. And we're going to, I think, muster some very, very effective information that you can use to talk back to your doctor or to your skeptical relatives and family who are swallowing uncritically the anti-supplement propaganda. That's February 26th, the Hoffman Center. You can call the Hoffman Center for information. Also, on January 15th, we've got a seminar that is beginning to fill up, and we have more space available for a discussion of natural therapy with hormones, bioidentical hormones for men and women. But in particular, we're going to address some concerns that arose in 2013 that testosterone is bad for the heart. So we'll talk about that on January 15th. That's a Wednesday evening at the Hoffman Center. You got to call the Hoffman Center for reservations. Don't just show up. All right, let's talk now to Madeline. Hello, Madeline.
Hello, Dr. Hoffman. I'm calling in regard to, you're talking about supplements, and yesterday I had Dr. Oz on, and he said that you shouldn't take calcium anymore. Mm-hmm. And in place of that, he said that you could take proteins and protein drinks, and he had a variety of the protein drinks. One that will help you lose weight.
Right. So hang on. Let me just comment on this. You know, Dr. Oz is a good friend and colleague. And, you know, I have to say that early on in his career, I actually featured Dr. Oz as a guest on Health Talk. And, you know, he's done remarkably well in getting the word out via the media about natural approaches to health. I have to say, though, on the calcium issue, I think he's oversimplifying, because calcium went from being like, oh, it's the antidote to all manner of osteoporosis problems. Just take, if you take enough calcium, it'll go right in your bones and you'll be fine. That was the Tums revolution of the 1980s. And then we realized that maybe, just maybe, calcium isn't all that effective, and maybe that some of that excess calcium ends up going to all the wrong places. You know, looking for love in all the wrong places. Well, you may be finding calcium in all the wrong places, like instead of in your bones, in your arteries, if you take too much. And the, I got to say, I'm looking very carefully at that research, and there was some research that suggested that if you take too much calcium, it could appear in your arteries. Women who consume more than 750 milligrams of supplemental calcium were found to have a little more plaque in their arteries. But then more recent studies have suggested, no, that's not the case. So I wouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater, or the calcium out with the bathwater. I think women who have osteoporosis need to take a little bit of calcium. There's a relatively small amount of calcium in a product that I have created called OsteoSupport. When it first came out, a lot of people said, well, what's the matter? You're not putting enough calcium in there. And I said, look, that's just enough. But calcium needs to be there with cofactors, magnesium and silica and boron and ipraflavone. These are some of the cofactors that help calcium work. And, of course, vitamin K is very important for the action of calcium, we know. And then there's vitamin D. And actually, it turns out that vitamin D may be the most important of all in terms of osteoporosis prevention. So, you know, modest amounts of calcium I wouldn't worry about. I think it's oversimplifying to say stop taking calcium. We need to, you know, sort of a yellow light on calcium. We need to do more research, but it's not time to abandon your calcium supplements. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine. To Intelligent Medicine. Ronald Hoffman here, answering your calls. Let's talk now to Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, Dr. Hoffman.
Hi there.
Dr. Hoffman, God bless you and nutritional supplements. The New
Thank
York
you.
Times has little to no credibility. They're engaging in nutritional fascism. They cannot stand the success, the popularity, and the effectiveness of nutritional medicine. They're engaging in shilling for big government, whether it be publishing our troop locations in Iraq, whether it be shoving man-made global warming down our throats, or in this case, trying to destroy the effectiveness of nutritional medicine.
Okay, good. You know, I agree with you, Thomas. You know, what I think is going on there, and it worries me about, you know, you're venturing into other areas of reportage by the New York Times. It makes me wonder if they get it so wrong on the vitamin and supplement and herbal front. And this is my bailiwick. I'm not, you know, an expert on foreign policy. I'm not an expert on, you know, domestic government programs. But it makes me wonder, you know, are they really missing the boat in their political reporting? Certainly, I know that when it comes to vitamin supplements and herbs, not only is there a bias, but there's a lot of inaccuracy. And, you know, I got to say, I'm going to conclude the program with this. You know, you didn't hear headlines about this thing that happened in 2013. Is a group called the Council for Responsible Nutrition went to Washington to make the case that we should encourage people to take supplements because it was estimated that we could save the healthcare budget billions of dollars. It was a systematic review of hundreds of scientific studies on 8 different dietary supplements, looking at conditions like macular degeneration, diabetes, osteoporosis, heart disease. And they found that just with omega-3 supplements alone, the savings could be $4 billion for reduction of significant cardiac disease events. So that study, that didn't get any headlines in the New York Times. But unfortunately, such is the nature of journalism in America, and that's why we've got Intelligent Medicine. So I hope you'll stay with us in 2014. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.